the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. I just wanted to tell you I'll be away for a bit on vacation, but my terrific colleagues and friends at EWTN Radio will be preparing a Best Of series in my absence. So sit back this weekend and enjoy a special listening adventure. My special guest this week is Father Brian Kolodejczuk, Missionary of Charity. He's the official postulator of the cause of canonization of Blessed Mother Teresa, foundress, as everyone listening knows, of the Missionaries of Charity. Now, he's been in Rome. He is in Rome. He came expressly for the March 15th announcement by Pope Francis of the decrees of canonization for Blessed Mother Teresa and four others. And the date for the canonization was also announced, I think everybody knows this by now, September 4th. So, Father Brian, welcome to Vatican Insider.
Thank you so much.
A little bit about your background. You're from Canada.
Yes, I'm from Winnipeg, Canada. And I was raised in the Ukrainian Catholic Church. And then I was for a while in the minor seminary of the Ukrainian Rite Redemptoris. And then a postulant philosophy student in Toronto, also with the Ukrainian Rite Redemptoris. And then I left after I finished philosophy. And at that time, my sister, when I was in the third year of philosophy, my sister joined the sisters. So after that third year in May, of way back in 1977, when I was very young, my parents and I, because we're only two, my parents and I came to Rome to see my sister. It was the first time we were going to see her when she was in the sisters. Oh. And Mother Teresa happened to be in Rome at the time. So we were staying in San Gregorio in the Camaldoli's monks' hostel, we might say. And so we were going for morning mass in the afternoon holy hour, and we were helping in the home. So Mother Teresa knew that I was a brother of one of her sisters. And so at that time, the first group of the Contemplative Brothers was beginning, that she had just started. And in the shelter, the night shelter, near the train station, they had the opening mass with Cardinal Poletti, and then Mother pinned the cross on one priest and five men, Italian men. And that was the beginning. And so at the end of the Mass, then it was time my parents and I to go out, and my parents said goodbye, and it was my turn, and Mother says to me, I would like to pin a cross on you too. And of course I was shocked, because Mother Teresa of Calcutta is saying this. So I didn't even say anything. I just kind of like kept on walking out the door, and only the next morning after Mass, I saw her alone, so I was brave enough to go up and ask her. And then she said, yes, come and join the brothers. And so I said, well, I couldn't. I had to go back home for the summer, and so I came back in September, and that was the beginning of my MC days from 1977.
Tell us what it was like to be around her, to be with her, to watch her, with everyone, not only the extremely poor and outcasts and so forth that she cared for, but even the leaders of the world.
Yeah, my honest impression was there's a couple things. One of them was that she was really motherly. So from the beginning, we all said just mother. Her friends just said mother. And she was very motherly. You know, sometimes people think the saints are in the clouds or something. Now we know Mother was a great mystic. And yet she was very feet on the ground, very practical, very observant. You couldn't get anything by her. And but still that motherly, she would notice, and what about this, and great memory. And so that was one thing. Another thing is that the way she did say the ordinary simple things. So sometimes I say, just imagine that you didn't know what she looked like. And then you just came to the convent and started watching. And then you would notice something special about that one, say that's mother, just by the way she would do the very simple ordinary things. Like, for example, going into the chapel, how she would take the water and make the sign of the cross, a genuflection. Those little things, then you would notice, hey, wait a minute, there's something special. And for her, that's she was living what she keeps saying is the ordinary things with extraordinary love. Little things, great love. And even she would say, the smaller the thing, the greater the love. So those little things she would do with great love and intention, like real conscious, deliberate acts and love. Even, you know, another example. In the first years I knew her, and she would sign a card or a letter or something, she would put, God bless you, mother. And after a while, she started putting, even for her own, for us, she would put, like, M. Teresa, M.C. So it was like, hey, wait a minute, you're going from mother to something more formal. And she said, ah, yes, but I counted the letters, and when I put M. Teresa, M.C., there's more letters, so there's more acts of love for Jesus.
Oh, my word. I have a wonderful friend. I certainly hope that you and Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, I hope you've met. Yes, and she wrote a book on her, how she met, just a serendipitous meeting with Mother Teresa that turned into years of visits, but especially correspondence, and Don introducing her children to her. So Mother Teresa, she was the genuine thing. She was what you see is what you get.
Right, yeah. Same. Whether it's President Reagan, Queen Elizabeth, Father X, Cardinal Y, poor man Z, whatever it was. It was the same mother, because for her, whoever they were, from the big ones to, let's say, the little ones, humanly speaking, it was the same Jesus. So always she had that, again, real vision of faith, and that she really lived in the concrete, was that right now, you, Joan, if it was mother, you, Joan, you are Jesus for me, and I'm giving you my full attention, and what I'm doing and what I'm saying is my love for Jesus in action. So that's and that's so that many witnesses said, when I was mother, I really felt like I was the only person in the world.
Wow, that is a special gift. Now, she died only days in 1997, September 5th, only days after Princess Diana. Mm-hmm. Now, they had met and had Princess Diana was like overwhelmed by this woman.
I mean, I don't know directly because I never met Princess Diana. I wasn't there whenever they met. But they did meet a few times, as far as I know. One of the more the pictures in the Bronx outside the house, that picture went everywhere. But I think that, like everyone else, Diana would have felt a real concern, a genuine love from Mother. She would be able to share whatever the suffering she was going through in her life and her marriage, etc., etc. And I think Mother and her real motherly love would, Princess Diana would have found that very consoling and helpful, uplifting, not to give her strength to keep on going.
Certainly at a time when she did need it. Now, Father Brian, are there any, there have to be some unwritten stories about Mother Teresa, not that you could know probably everything or was written about her. I guess that would be part of your job as pastor.
Oh, yeah. Not even now when I meet people and they have, oh, I remember this and their experiences. So I say, please write them down, because once you die, that's the end of those stories. So anyone who has stories and is listening and you know, just write to me. Just look on motherteresa.org is the website of the Mother Teresa Center, which is the project of the postulation office. And even one story, even simple when it is, it's something that says something. So, yeah, there's tons of stories, because Mother traveled everywhere and met all kinds of people. And so there are many, many stories.
Endless. What are one or two moments that you had with her, or maybe certainly in the presence of other people, that you found just so touching? You kind of walked away and it stayed with you for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can say one just that our family experienced. After my sister made final profession here in Rome, she was sent to Poland as novice mistress. And then a couple years later, she was diagnosed with melanoma cancer. And so the regional superior, that was one region in those days, so she brought my sister to Rome, because they had done something, they had taken something away from the skin in Poland. But she came to Rome, and then Mother was here at that time. And just the week before, my parents had left New York, because I was in the Bronx then. We fathers began in the Bronx. And so they had just visited me. Then 1 week later, they were back in New York, because Mother, instead of keeping my sister here, she knew that she had met my parents. She knew that there was only the two of us. And so she said, okay, now that she's going to, then she just changed her whole schedule. And okay, now I'm taking my sister Charbel to New York, And there's one of our pashas at the time was used to work in Sloan Kettering. So he knew a doctor, and he asked the doctor, and the doctor was happy. And so Mother changed her whole schedule, flew with my sister from Rome to New York. And typically, Mother, we picked her up at the airport and then straight to the doctor, no wasting time. If you can do it now, we're doing it now. And so we arrived at the doctor's office, and then Mother says to the doctor, I have a gift for you. Mm-hmm. And the doctor is a little surprised, and then Mother says, please make my sister well. So she was giving the doctor a chance to do some good activity, a charitable activity. That was her gift to the doctor. And so she stayed a few days, made sure everything was in order and things were being taken care of, and my sister was fine after. So that's typical Mother, no, very quietly, right. Not saying anything, but I mean, changed her whole schedule. And for
somebody else than for herself is my understanding, what I've read about her. In other words, she'll go out of her way to help you, me, or a total mm-hmm. stranger, but would not think about herself, because I know she'd need medicine, run out of it, and the nuns would worry about it, but she would be like, you know, God will provide.
Right, exactly. You know, they had that real trust, and so the sisters around her had to make sure they were taking care of her and watching the medicine and sure. all those kind of things. But and for a while she was wearing glasses, and then one day she said, well, I think someone else needs these glasses.
So more than I do.
Yeah.
Now, how did you become postulator? I know that John Paul waived the 5-year waiting period. Yeah, God bless him for that. I mean, I think anybody who ever met her, their first impression was, oh, what a saint. Saintly person, or what a saint. So he waived that. And then how did you get in the picture?
Okay. In 1996, I came to Rome to be the superior of our community here, which is the Formation House. They study theology, our men study theology here in Rome. And I was finishing my PhD at the time, so I had an academic background. So a month after Mother died, the Archbishop of Calcutta went to the Congregation for Saints asking, what about the cause, can it start, etc. And they said, well, wait a minute. But you can start, have a little commission, and start working on the documents, collecting documents, putting them in order. You can get the testimony of people who may 5 years later not be around or not be in shape to give their testimony. So there was two sisters appointed and myself were this commission. And in that capacity, I just went one day to the Congregation for Saints and I asked, you know, I'm doing this, someone can give me some help, some tips or something. And the priest who came out was the one in charge of the postulator's course. And so he said, oh, why don't you take the course? And I said, well, okay. So I asked permission, I took the course, and that began in November. That December, we found out in January only, but December 12th, was the day that the Pope signed the decree, or the decree was signed by the Cardinal, I guess, for waiving the 5-year
Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Exactly. That's why for all of our North American listeners, or even Americans, considering all of America, as the Church does. So that was a nice little twist there. And so in January, we were told, and so the first thing, well, now who's the postulator? So there was myself and another of our priests taking the course and with no experience what to do. So myself and the sisters went there, asked here, asked there. Then we went to the Jesuits, Father Molinari and Father Gumpel, and we asked them. And they very nobly said no. I mean, you could say, oh, we can have Mother Jesus Christ, no? And they said, no, we'll help you, but it should be one of you, because you're talking about a charism. It's not just a person. So to really present and understand someone, it's like someone should be sharing in that same charism. And so because of that, the sisters and the other spirit generals at the time said, okay, you can do it, Father Brian. And so that was the beginning. And sure enough, the Jesuits were wonderful. Father Molinari Gumpel had a question. I was here from Calcutta, whatever. They were great, and Monsignor Sarno and the Congregation for Saints as well.
No,
so they were, so they were a great help, and so we did it without any major errors. Thanks be to God.
I was listening to the EWTN, and you were on with one of your little snippets, and you said some words that brought me back to the church. I've been away for a long time. You don't know how much I appreciate those words, and I don't know why those particular words that day got to me.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Wherever you are in the world, you can access the EWTN Global Catholic Network. It's everywhere. You can get EWTN's great Catholic programming on your car radio, at home on your TV, computer, or smart speaker. With EWTN's app, you can take EWTN everywhere, on your phone or mobile device. If you want your news in print, turn to EWTN's paper of record, the National Catholic Register. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
I firmly believe that prayer is communication with God. And if we know that God is a loving Father, why wouldn't we want to talk to God? The reality is, we've got to talk to our family, we've got to talk to our friends, and if God is real, and God is definitely real, He wants to hear about our day. He also wants to know how we're doing and what our needs are. Prayer is communication with God.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my interview with Father Brian Koladejuk, MC, Missionary of Charity. What would you say is one of the most, or some of the most difficult things about being a postulator?
Well, a cause like Mother Teresa's cause, on one hand, is very challenging, because you're talking about a major figure of the 20th century, and literally we have to do things in all the continents, look for documents, see who can be witnesses. Okay, so that was the challenge just by the size of it. Okay, a typical average cause will have around 50 witnesses. We had 113 who testified orally. And then we had many other people who wouldn't be knowing enough to go through all the questions. There was 263 questions. And so we had many more people, including the sisters, wrote their testimony, some shorter, some longer. So that was, in a sense, the easy part, because when you would say it was for Mother Teresa, people were very cooperative. They would look and they would share and they would be willing to be a witness, write their testimony. So in the end, we collected around 35,000 pages in 2 years.
Wow.
And so there's I brought from Calcutta more than 80 volumes, roughly 400 pages each. So there was a lot of material, and thankfully, because now we have it, and as the years pass, it's more and more difficult to get these things. Things are lost, So thankfully, I think.
But at least she was, should we say, a contemporary, trying to get a lot of information about somebody who died in 1872 or something.
Right. That's going to be much easier because it's so recent, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, tell us about the miracle that it led to the canonization.
Okay. The case, it was in Santos, Brazil. Interesting, by the way, Santos was also where the miracle for the canonization of Baquita, Saint Baquita, was in the same place. So when I was there doing it, I said to the bishop, Santos is really making Santos.
I love it.
By having those two miracles there. So the miracle was there. It was a mechanical engineer. He was about 35 years old. And he had been sick for a while. They couldn't really find out. It took a while for them to get the proper diagnosis. And so he had a bacterial infection in the brain. And that led to multiple abscesses, which led in turn to hydrocephaly, which is water in the brain because the water couldn't go back, couldn't go down the spine, or exactly however it is. So they tried different therapies and antiviral kind of things, and he was getting worse and worse. So it came to December 9th, Feast of St. Juan Diego. Around 2 in the morning, he had such acute pain in the brain, it was really bad. And then he went into a coma, and basically he was dying. He was on his way out. And so they wanted to do surgery to try to get the liquid, and they couldn't for technical problems they had. And so he was already in the operating room, and then they couldn't do it. And so this was around 6:10 in the evening. The doctor, who was not Catholic, walked out of the room. It's nothing more to do. At that around that same time, around 6 p.m., his wife, knowing that her husband was dying, went to the parish, and that time the parish priest joined her, and the family already had been praying to Mother, and during the day she was asking people to pray. But she went to the parish church at around 6 p.m. and prayed very intensely. And so 6:40 p.m., half an hour after the doctor left, he came back into the operating room, and there's this man, Marsilio, saying, now, what am I doing here in the operating room? So he was awake.
Wow.
And no pain, and that was it. So, and the doctor said later, you know, he had like 30 patients like that, 29 died, and only...
And the wife had been praying to Mother Teresa.
Yeah, so they, yeah. Yes. And kind of an auxiliary miracle, you might say, was that they had told him, because of all the treatment he had gone through over the years, that he wouldn't be able to have children, or that he wouldn't, his wife wouldn't be able to conceive. And now they have two children.
Oh, how lovely is that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, let me ask you about miracles. I know a number of miracles were reported as having taken place in the lifetime of John Paul. I know one story that a personal witness, his secretary now, a cardinal, Zhivets, told me. However, the church does not allow anything, even if it could be proven and has 150 witnesses, they don't allow any so-called miracle that takes place in the lifetime of
correct,
the person.
Correct.
Father Brian, do we know why that is?
Certainly. The idea is, just a very quick summary of how this process works. So it's like a bottom-up process. It's not like one day the Pope says, let's see, who can I have a candidate? No, who can I have as a candidate for beatification or canonization? No, it's from the people, among the people of God. There's already a work of the Holy Spirit, and the people have a sense of who is holy. Okay, and so all the formal process is the church's discernment of the action of the Holy Spirit among the people of God. And then at the end of it, the church will come to what's called a moral certainty of the person's fittingness to be beatified and canonized, but not absolute certainty. There could be some hidden thing that no one knows. So the idea is that the miracle is God's confirmation of the church's discernment of what is among the people of God. And therefore, there's a miracle after death, because we're talking about now this miracle in the process itself.
Right.
So there's one that has to happen after death for beatification, and then the miracle for canonization has to be after the beatification. So it's further step.
Oh.
So you can't have two during, and then we'll say, okay, we'll use one for beatification, use the other one for canonization. No, it has to be, no, the miracle is confirmation of that step, and after beatification, the next miracle that happens after the beatification is the confirmation for the canonization.
Oh, I never thought about it, but of course it's so very logical. So we really have to count on it's the intercession of this person.
Correct.
Because people say, why do we adore the saints?
We
adore God.
Mother who did the miracle.
Right.
God did the miracle through her intercession.
Through her intercession, seeing her as saintly. So now, of course, the next big thing for millions of us is obviously September 4th. And I did become aware that the bishops of India had asked for the canonization to take place in Calcutta. So it makes such very, very good sense.
Mm-hmm.
It will take place in Rome. Rome probably, even space-wise, you can correct me on this, could accommodate more people. But it's also the universal nature of sainthood.
Correct.
Which is why a canonization is in Rome.
Correct. That's why now Pope Benedict went back to the previous custom of beatification happening in the local place. Because that's what it means.
Yeah.
Beatification is limited permission for public veneration in the local place, or the local area, let's say. And so that makes sense, because that's what beatification is. It's limited and local, so it makes more sense to have it there. Okay, canonization is for presented in a church, saying to the whole church, here is a person that is a model of holiness, our friend in heaven who intercedes for us. So, as you say, it's very understandable why the bishops would have wanted it in India. It would have been a great event for them. But, you know, more objectively speaking, the meaning of it is more appropriate, Rome. And then on a more practical level, you know, there's a big space in Maidan in Calcutta. But even, say, when there was question whether John Paul would go for the beatification, there was concern of security and space and all those kind of things. So Hopefully Pope Francis will go to India.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So at least
have a
well, the Indian Catholics and the many people who would not be
able to come. Oh, it would have been a great grace for India and the Church in Asia, certainly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, Father, one last question. What do you do now? I mean, you don't simply retire from...
Oh, no. Right? My postulator is one hat. My other hat is the Superior General of the Fathers. So... And that'll keep me going to 2020. Then I finish my two terms. And in the meantime, so we continue after. That's why the postulation office set up Mother Teresa Center. And so that even after, in view of even the post-canonization period, because the MC family, the sisters and the brothers and the fathers, had a basic question after Mother died. What do we do with Mother Teresa's legacy, her writings, her words, the message? Either we let it go to the wind and whoever, whatever happens, happens, or no, this is our responsibility. We have to be responsible for it. So, of course, they took the responsible choice. And so the Mother Teresa Center is after the canonization, we'll keep going on our keywords and giving permissions and publishing and material that we put out, books and everything. The keyword is authenticity.
Yeah.
So we want to give the authentic, real, full Mother Teresa. And that's so that for now I will continue.
Wonderful.
With that.
No, I just absolutely, as you were talking, thought of one thing. Do we know yet what relic will be brought? Is that in the planning stages, or do we know?
Well, that's a very simple question because we only have blood and hair. So it'll be, as was for the beatification, it'll be some blood, a major blood relic is all we can do.
All right. Well, listen, God bless you for your time, all the amazing work you did. But I say God bless you, and he really has, because your 20 years with Mother Teresa, I mean, it just has to be the biggest blessing of your life.
It was a great gift. Only I wish I would have been more attentive to write things down, experiences, what she said, but when we were young and less... That's wise.
Yes, exactly. I know what you mean. Well, listen, God bless you for your stay here. I love all the nuns and come here when I can with things, hopefully, that they need. And so, again, thank you.
Thank you very much, John.
Thanks for tuning in to the Best of Vatican Insider while I'm on vacation. And thanks to my EWTN colleagues and their hard work in preparing this week's program. Come back next weekend for another special listening adventure.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.